Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream Podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Very excited to introduce today's guest, Demetrius Parker. Demetrius Parker is a marketing and media strategist at the CDC. Demetrius, great to have you on our podcast. You have the distinction of being the first guest from the CDC, and you have a incredibly interesting career path. Please tell us a little bit about your role at the CDC and how you got there.
Hello, Mario. Hello, everyone. My pleasure to join you. Thank you for inviting me. Well, I consider myself a marketing communication and integrated media strategist. And by that, I take the whole continuum of communication functions like government communications, marketing, advertising, community engagement, corporate philanthropy. And particularly in this time when we are looking to engage so many varieties of ethnic nationalities and cultures, it's important to be able to understand that audience, and there are different ways to engage them. And I look at them as elements of culture, depending on which communication function I use. So, for example, sometimes it's important, depending on the strategy, sometimes it's important to engage your community at the community-based level. So the communication function that I would use would be community engagement or community relations. And then sometimes, of course, it's social media or advertising. So I like to look at the specific audience in the most granular way I can, and then look at the social media platform where they are most active and then engage them that way.
And we're recording this today is July 24th. I'd be remiss not to bring up, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic, one that we really haven't seen since 100 years. And as you're talking about how to reach people, I mean, how has your job changed, or has it, in terms of communications with the pandemic? Or are you involved with that? Are you focusing on other communications? Because, you know, the pandemic's not the only thing going on from a health perspective, but definitely top of mind for many people. I mean, what can you share in terms of how your role has changed or hasn't changed as a result of the coronavirus?
Oh, well, it has definitely changed. I am one who gets involved at the community level. I do a lot of conferences, professional conferences, where I go out and meet. One of the greatest tools, I believe, anyone in communication and marketing can have is the aggregator tool, or an aggregator organization, one where you don't have to do all of the research yourself. You don't have to try and reach out to every segment of the audience yourself, but find a platform or, for example, an association that focuses on a particular ethnic group or nationality or cultural group, and then let them validate your message by having them reach out to that population or audience segment on your behalf, and that gives you automatic credibility. So I go to a lot of conferences and present CDC information, particularly on cancer control and cancer prevention efforts. And so I'm unable to do that. That's the way that I get to meet a lot of the organizations that are focusing on cancer prevention and control across the landscape. So I've had to do a lot of virtual meetings, and a lot of the associations and organizations are themselves learning how to present a conference virtually. So there's been a lot of hiccups, but there's also been some good successes.
And I love your focus on communities, right? Because as you mentioned, you already have that built-in credibility. They're the experts. They've done the research and knowing what kind of messaging to put out. How are you finding these organizations? And I'm asking you because I've traditionally had people from the private sector and marketing that have trouble with multicultural marketing, you know, trouble finding mm-hmm. these organizations. What's a tip mm-hmm. that you can give to our listeners, keeping in mind they come from the private world, of how to suss out these organizations that really understand these cultures that you're trying to reach out to?
Oh, that's a great question. One of the, when I used to live in Washington, D.C., and one of the great jewels I discovered there were the associations and think tanks. These are the most amazing aggregators of knowledge and audience insight that you could ever find. In Washington, I was a member of an organization called the Association, the American Association of Association Executives. So there's an association that has as its members all of the other associations. ASAE is its acronym. So whatever audience or whatever subject matter you want to engage, do research on, approach, then they are a great resource to go to. Whether it's an ethnic nationality you want to look at, for example, that might be the Association of Black Journalists or Hispanic Journalists or American Advertising or Marketers, or it could be public policy makers. There's an Association for Government Officials. I mean, you name it. ASAE has as its membership those associations. So that's a great place to start. The other thing is that I discovered is there are think tanks based in D.C. because they want to be able to influence public policy on behalf of their particular subject matter. And these think tanks, for example, like the Urban Institute, will have incredible data that will give you insight to whatever it is you want to know about. So you can Google think tanks and a particular subject matter that you want to cover, and no doubt you'll find one, and you can get all kinds of insight that way. For example, when I moved to Atlanta, I needed to understand more about the Latino Hispanic audience. So the first organization I went to was the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And from there, I got all of the insight that I needed in terms of which were the best agencies to go to, which were the best community-based organizations to go to, if I needed a promotora, community health education resource, then I could go there to find out who the best were for that. Filmmakers, actors, producers, artists, whatever I needed, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce was able to give me that.
I love that. And one thing that's recurring that I really appreciate that you're doing is your reliance on data. I think I think marketing and communications professionals for a long time had this air, this idea that they do it by the gut. They're creative. You don't need to test something. You don't need data. I mean, tell me more about how important data is in your day to day.
I'll tell you, you just described me to a T about 30 years ago. I worked on the private sector side, and I worked with the large agencies. I did a lot of, when I was in New York, I worked with a couple of entertainment PR agencies. And you're right, we were kind of like the community with the Wall Street know-it-alls, only with communication and marketing. like Mad Men, like the TV show says. Yeah. We thought we knew everything. And when I came to Atlanta, the governor had just launched the cancer awareness and education effort for statewide for Georgia. There was the big tobacco settlement where billions of dollars were given to states to from the tobacco companies. And the governor wanted to launch a campaign for Georgia to help them understand how to prevent cancer. And I was working with one of the big PR firms here in Atlanta. And I said, you know something, I'd love to do that. I can show these public health people how to do PR and marketing. And fortunately, my arrogance didn't take away from my actually getting hired to do the position. But then when I did get the position, I was based in the Georgia Public Health Department and to direct the campaign. And I met epidemiology for the first time. And I was amazed, Mario. I was amazed at how much insight they had on, they call them populations, but we call them audiences.
All right.
And they knew so much about people. And I said, wow, do you realize how valuable this data is that you have? PR agencies would pay millions of dollars for this kind of insight. But that's when I learned that I couldn't just quote something from the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or from The Economist and say that it's true. The public health way, the science and evidence-based way for using data is to have it be science-based. You know, they have to know who did the research, what protocols did they use, how many people were interviewed or engaged, you know, all of that. So that's when the integrity of the science in public health is outstanding. And that's when I really learned that I had a lot to learn. And I wrote a paper, as a matter of fact, that focused on blending private sector approaches with public sector integrity and accountability. And the two really make a powerful combination.
And where can we find that paper for people listening? Is it publicly available?
Yes, it is. Academia, what's the name of the site is, or you can go to CDC's website and you can, if you put in my name and put public sector, let me see. I'll have to get that to you, but it is available at an academic portal that has published papers, and it's also available on CDC's website. I'll have to get the exact name for you.
Yeah, no problem. For people listening, my go-to is Google Scholar. If you go to Google Scholar and type in Demetrius Parker, the paper should pop up there. And I love how your change of heart or your acceptance of data was literally when you met scientists, epidemiologists, you know, the best marketing is that marriage between marketing and science, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And you were talking about Mad Men. Well, now we're math men, right?
Yes, that's right.
we were talking a little bit about before the podcast. You had proposed a tool. A data-driven tool. Please share with me a little bit more about what that tool was and kind of how the idea came to you.
Okay. Well, the national NIH, National Institutes of Health, and particularly their National Cancer Institute, has some research that just completely, it both validated my thinking about how to do audience segmentation, and it transformed it and expanded it all at the same time. And it's called the Cultural Framework for Health. And what it does, it's a report that provides the first multidisciplinary consensus effort, and that's that's an operative word there, consensus. A lot of different types of scientists came together and agreed on how to define culture and methods for identifying the necessary scientific elements and methods required to identify what culture is and how it functions to influence health across the variety of diverse populations. So I used that along with some other research I had been doing on culture itself. There are a lot of scientific definitions of culture that are really, really heady. So what I did for marketing and advertising and public relations purposes was take that research and come up with elements of culture for myself that I could use to segment audiences.
Can you share with us what some of those key elements are that you've distilled? Because I think that's super interesting.
Yes, absolutely. Hold on one second. Language is number one. History is absolutely essential. Then there's the box that includes faith, religion, and spirituality. There's values and attitudes. Education is incredibly important. This one is really important too, aesthetics. What a particular culture considers to be beautiful. Huh. Their definition and parameters for what beauty is. Socioeconomic status and class. It means different things to different cultures. Ethnicity and nationality drives just about everything. Technical and material culture, you know, how in marketing and advertising, a lot of times how a cultural group might use mobile phones differs across the platform. How they use the web, whether or not they have access to the web, whether they still use print media. So technical and material culture is important. Law and politics is at the heart of everything, particularly right now. A lot of the times the government won't be able to, public health won't be able to connect with the community because there's mistrust. So understanding before you get to that audience, what their affiliation is, what their experiences are with the law and with politics, understanding that and then using that insight to engage them makes a big difference. Acculturation and enculturation, very important, because you can have different levels of acculturation and enculturation in one household. So how do you get a message through to those multi-generational households? And then gender and sexuality and history is huge.
Tell me more about history. I have an idea of kind of all the other components, but history is one I haven't heard of before.
Okay. Well, for example, I was just talking with a colleague at UCLA, and she's Japanese American. And there's a lot of going on now with immigration. And she was telling me about Japanese Americans and the internment that they had to endure during World War II, and how that is still so very much a part of the psyche of the Japanese American culture. Just like with African Americans and Juneteenth, when the enslaved Africans were freed, and then in Texas, they didn't get the word for many, many months later. So Juneteenth is a big celebration for African Americans. So understanding the history of people and why the Irish came to America during the potato famine in Ireland, and how that affected their culture and standing in America. They were very much discriminated against when they first came, and how they overcame those those hurdles and obstacles. And then, of course, the Cuban Americans and how they came over in the late 50s and early 60s and how their acculturation is much different than, say, Mexican Americans who are coming to this country, who have come to this country over the years. So understanding the history of an ethnic group makes a big difference in how you authentically engage them and create communication intervention campaigns or ads or whatever it is you want to do on the communication side. Having an understanding of their history gives you much more credibility and builds what is essential in order for someone to accept what you're telling them, and that's trust.
And that's, I mean, that component now, I mean, right when you mentioned, you know, Japanese internment, I was like, okay, I get it now, what you mean by history. Mm-hmm. And that point is so salient right now, but in the time that we're at right now as a country, right. You know, right. Understanding the history of African Americans and what's happening from a social perspective is, from a social justice perspective, is so important.
It is.
Believe it or not, we're hitting our time here, and you just have so much knowledge. And I want to ask you, you know, we have, I would say, the vast majority of our listeners are from the private sector. Mm-hmm. What's a tip that you would give to people in the private sector, because you've been there, now that you're on the other side, what's something that the private sector can learn from the public sector or the CDC specifically when trying to reach multicultural audiences?
Generally speaking, some of the experience I have is with corporate social responsibility and corporate philanthropy, and a lot of the major corporations are stepping up right now, and I'm very happy to see that. What makes a big difference, and I'd like to share with my private sector colleagues, is to the messenger makes a huge difference. Authenticity is everything. So as we make the attempt to engage audiences and to participate in social justice causes, make certain that you have an authentic history, as we were talking about before, of engaging this audience, this particular audience that you're seeking to join, to influence. That's number one. And number two, check in with that audience first. If you are seeking to make a change in a community or support a change in a community, if you're seeking to have them participate with you in your efforts, then ask them first. Seek their input first. Ask them some questions first. It's almost like asking permission to come into their home, you know. So that's essential.
That's great. I mean, that's great, because we talk about authenticity at Think Now. We've done research around it, but you have a different mm-hmm. angle, which I like, which is it's not something that you have to manufacture. There's people, there's organizations out there that already have that authenticity, that trust. And so your point to about the messenger is great. Thank you so much for joining us, Demetrius. If we want to learn more about your work, about the marketing and communications department at the CDC, is there a website or a section of the website kind of dedicated to the marketing and communications work that the CDC does, or where can people find out more information about your work?
Yes, there is. You can go to cdc.gov/Office of Communication. Well, no, I'll tell you. The best way is to Google the Office of the Associate Director for Communication. Office of the Associate Director for Communication. at CDC. And that's that lays out all of the work that we do.
Great.
And our approach to it.
Thanks again for joining us, Demetrius, and thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.